tuned for Leologos Radio, the weekly radio program featuring the best in Greek music and culture, plus interviews with Greek and international newsmakers. Leologos Radio with Michael Nevaralekis begins now.
Σ' αγαπώ, σ' έχω πια ξεχάσει και δεν θέλω να σε δω. Τώρα όσο και να θες να σ' αγαπώ, δεν γυρίζω πίσω, δεν μπορώ. Έκανες το λάθος, άφησες το πάθος και φύγες μες στη νυχτιά. Κομμάτια, όρκους και παλάτια και την άδεια μου καρδιά. Τώρα όσο και να θες να σ' αγαπώ, σ' έχω πια ξεχάσει και δεν θέλω να σε δω. Τώρα όσο και να θες να σ' αγαπώ, δεν γυρίζω πίσω, δεν μπορώ. Τρέξεις να με βρεις, δεν θα με προλάβεις ούτε θα μ' ονειρευτείς. Τώρα όσο και να τρέξεις να με βρεις, δεν θα με γνωρίσεις κι αν με δεις. Έκανες το λάθος, άφησες το πάθος και μ' αρνήθηκες τρελή. Έσβησες τα αστέρι, βρήκες άλλο τέρι, άλλο χάδι και φιλί. Τώρα όσο και να τρέξεις να με βρεις, δεν θα με προλάβεις ούτε θα μ' ονειρευτείς. Τώρα όσο και να τρέξεις να με βρεις, δεν θα με γνωρίσεις κι αν με δεις. Πως μ' αγαπάς, δεν γυρίζω πίσω, ρέστα τώρα μη ζητάς. Τώρα όσο και να λες πως μ' αγαπάς, δεν γυρίζω, μη το συζητάς.
We started off today's program with Kostas Makedonas and a song titled Ekanes to Lathos here on Leologos Radio, the weekly Greek radio program which bridges the global Greek community and which airs worldwide on 19 radio stations across 5 continents, shortwave and online. My name is Michael Nevradakis, and today on our broadcast, we will feature, as part of the Leologos interview series, an interview with Greek-American professor, journalist, and blogger Irene Arkos, founder of GreekAmericanGirl.com, who will speak to us about pertinent issues facing families and particularly women of the Greek diaspora and the difficulties which often exist living between two or more cultures within a community of the diaspora. And following this interview, stay tuned for our Commentary of the Week segment, where we will focus on the ongoing reversals of the pre-election promises made by Syriza and the continued austerity measures and privatizations which are being enforced by the government. And that will be followed up by our special musical tribute to Greek singer Rena Kumioti. Coming up now, here on Leologos Radio, is this week's edition of the Leologos interview series and our interview with professor and journalist Irene Arkos. the Diálogos Interview Series, our weekly segment featuring interviews on matters pertaining to Greece and the worldwide Greek community, coming up next here on Diálogos Radio. Joining us today on Diálogos Radio in the Diálogos Interview Series is Greek-American journalist and blogger Irene Arkos. Irene is the founder of the well-known blog Greek-American Girl, a longtime teacher in the New York City public school system, and an adjunct professor at Nassau Community College in New York. Irene, welcome to our program today.
Thank you, Michael, and the fine folks at Diálogos Media. It's a pleasure to be here. It's really an honor.
And to get us started, share with us a few words about your very successful blog, Greek American Girl. How did the idea for this blog first come about, and what kind of content is featured on a blog?
Well, first, it started with a deep need to express the issues and the triumphs and just the life of someone like me, someone who is a diaspora Greek woman trying to hold on to the roots of being Greek, but at the same time, trying to assimilate to a bigger, larger, dominant culture. And I was kind of frustrated with the sort of the traditional media for the Greek community, as it's represented a more older school, sort of like a different, like I said, different era of journalism. And I didn't find that my voice and the voice of women like myself was being broadcast, was being heard, or even given the freedom to express itself. And, you know, we have so many immigrant populations. It's a melting pot in New York City. And I was looking at the other ones, especially as a female. And of course, they have their own version of a female publication or a female journal. So there's Latina, there's something for the Asian women. But we, as Greek women, did not have anything like that. And so I've been a writer and, you know, an English teacher for a long time. And I said, you know, let's just do it. Let me create a website that tries to get the Greek Hellenic woman's voice, not just American, but global, right? So I was born in South Africa. I lived in Greece. I lived, you know, I traveled and I did journalism in the Middle East. And then I grew up in New York. So we're always, as Greeks of the diaspora, we're very global. We're not just in America. We're everywhere. Like they say, yis opuis ke patris. So I tried to bring that perspective in there. And I didn't only want to make it fashion and style and fluff and this and that. I wanted it to kind of strike a balance between the serious and also the funnies. And I also wanted to get a very broad spectrum of readers. So not just the young, not just the old. So I wanted to put a little bit of everything. So as women of various stages of life, they would find something to read and take home with. And I also wanted to create a forum and a collective place where women could talk to each other, because I think it's different when the conversation is public. It has to be a public dialogue, because only in a public dialogue can you effect change in your society and in the larger world. You know, as women, you know, we tend to talk a lot, but we go to the cafenio and we vent with our friends and we have a lot of things to say, but we keep it always around the kitchen table. But I think in order to have a powerful voice, it has to be collective and it has to be public. So that's one of or two or three reasons why I tried to start this idea of a website. And to be honest, I'm actually not the first. There's a good colleague that we have, Dr. Petrona in Thessaloniki, who did a whole historical research project where she traced women's publications in the immigrant communities in the early part of the U.S. And there actually was a journal called Elmida. It was in Greek, and it was distributed as sort of like the female's voice for the Greek immigrants. So I feel like it's new in that the internet and the social media has made it a new vehicle But it's actually been a long tradition. I'm actually from a tradition that I didn't know of Greek women's writing and the Greek woman's perspective in the larger society.
Let's discuss in some more detail some of the various pressures that Greek families and Greek women of the diaspora often face, as they essentially exist between two worlds and two cultures. One of the many pressures that are faced by young women and also young men of the diaspora is to marry Greek, to stay within the Greek culture. How do these pressures manifest themselves in your view, and what are your thoughts on this issue more broadly?
Oh boy, I think being a hybrid anything, a hybrid identity, whether Greek Australian, Greek Tasmanian, I know Greek Brit, it comes with a certain sense of conflict because you're residing in both cultures. You have two identities and sometimes they're bound to clash. So even little things like our U.S. Culture encourages us to be independent, to think, do your own thing, be bold, don't listen to anyone. But our Greek culture focuses a lot on the family, on the collective benefit of the group. So it's not so egocentric, it's more collective. And that's going to bring a lot of conflict when it comes time to making choices. For example, moving out. Moving out was unheard of in my house. You know, when I would ask my parents, when can I move out? They were like, that's outrageous. And I go to the study of the spirits. That's something that only the bad girls did because there would be an ulterior motive for their going away. They saw independence as a way of rejecting the family warmth and the family love. And they took it as an affront to honor, basically. So even the choice of moving out becomes hard, or even the choice of a career. I'm also thinking, how much are we made to choose the professions we choose as women, and how much is it of our own choice? I mean, I think women are socialized differently in the family, especially from the Mediterranean. So that has an impact on their career choice. Now, you mentioned marriage. That's a really big conflict, both for males and females in the Greek community, in the diaspora communities. But I think more especially for women, because women are the ones who keep the culture. You're the reliquary. You're the one, the depositor of the culture. So you are the one responsible to pass on the culture and the religion and the traditions to the next generation. So there's a great pressure to keep the Greek traditions through marriage. And because there is such a fear that we can lose those traditions, we can lose our sense of identity if we don't keep it Greek, if we don't marry within our ethnicity, it becomes like of a paramount importance. It becomes an obsession. God forbid. I mean, there's nothing worse you can do as a woman to marry a non-Greek because, God forbid, you're going to lose your identity. And at the same time, it is a real fear. The realization that one could lose your identity because, let's be honest, you know, there's a joke that says, what would you want to be if you weren't Greek? The answer is dead. We are very proud to keep our Greek identity. We don't want to lose it. And in order for us to keep it, then the pressure to keep the Greek through marriage becomes very great. And so the conflict is even more heightened for us. But at the same time, we're not living in Greece and we're living in this great, big, diverse community. And so, as luck would have it, the chances are you fall in love with another Greek are slim if you're not constantly surrounded by Greeks all the time. And to lose one's identity is an anathema. I mean, I felt it when, I think it was Bacha one year, my parents visited my aunt up in Vermont. And there's not a lot of that many Orthodox churches up there in Vermont. So I remember driving for miles and miles and miles in order to make it to this small Orthodox church somewhere in Rutland for the Pascha service. And when we got there, I went in, and this is as a young girl, and I felt so strange because there were supposedly Greeks wearing jeans, baseball caps, and it wasn't even a church. It was a rented space in a storefront. And I froze right there because I said, my gosh, if I stay here long enough, I'm going to become an American and I'm going to become one of these people. And like, no, gosh, that's the worst thing for a Greek, to become a non-Greek. And so the pressure for the young people to marry is so, so high because of that loss of identity that comes through not marrying Greek. Yet on the other hand, and I posted an article by a young woman yesterday on my site who's having the same issues with her mother because she's dating an Ecuadorian. And she says in her article that it comes from fear. Like our parents keep us kind of with this Greekiness on us all the time because they're afraid to let us go. But she says, but that's the other side of it, that you have to be open to the cultures and you have to embrace yourself within a larger global community. And sometimes you can pick to have the best of both worlds and live in them. So it's a very delicate balance. You want to keep it Greek because you want to stay true to your roots. And you know that your roots are so rich and many times richer than the roots of your new home. But at the same time, you don't want to become this very exclusive, you cut everybody off group that doesn't want to play with anyone. You know, and I think we have that in the Greek community. Sometimes we're so focused on being Greek that we become autistic in a way. Like we're so self-centered that we become provincial sometimes and we make our own little parties and pat each other on the back like we're these great people because we're in this in-group. And sometimes you need to break that to become larger, to open up your perspective. So at the same time, we are proud to be Greek. We have to go beyond just being Greek. Otherwise, we will be self-defeating and almost incestuous. So I think that that's where being bicultural or tricultural, it comes as a big, very big asset. Because you get that global perspective, and then you can choose.
Now, continuing along this topic, within households of the Greek diaspora, there is often, as you mentioned, a struggle to keep the Greek culture and the Greek language alive, both as new immigrants have assimilated to their new countries, but also for the children of these families as well. And many times, it's actually the children themselves that are resistant to go to Greek school or to go to church, or who have mixed feelings about existing between the two cultures. What are your thoughts on this issue, and how could these tensions be resolved, in your view?
Speaking from my own process of assimilation, I think young people go through a process. When you're young and you need to fit in, you need to reject everything that your parents are telling you you should do to melt into your bigger surroundings. So I remember growing up after elementary school, in my middle school and high school years, I did not want to be associated with anything Greek because that was so uncool. You know, my parents would stop on the LIE with plastic bags and knives and pick up the horta and you know, they would do ridiculous things like bake their own bread instead of make, you know, the sandwiches from the white toast. You know, this is all the stuff that that movie is all about. I won't mention its name. Everybody knows it. But I think as you grow older, you realize you come to terms with both sides. When you're young and you're immature and you're still trying to find yourself, you reject that part that you're given in order to find your true identity. And once you get comfortable in your own skin, once you don't feel such an outsider because you're an immigrant, then you come full circle again. And then you embrace your roots and your parents' roots. And then you become, I think, a very staunch supporter of your original family. I find that it takes a while, but it happens. Now, and I've always had that question, you know, sometimes some young people in immigrant families or first generation, second generation, third generation, eventually they assimilate to the point where Greek is only in their history. But I don't know if there's been enough study sociologically, psychologically. I don't think there's been enough research to trace that pattern. I think eventually, yeah, of course, we will all become American. But how long does that take? And why for some faster and why for some not? That's something that would need some kind of professor in some sociological school to do some sort of research to answer. But I think personally, you do come full circle and you become happy being on that little seesaw of two. So you kind of go one way for one and then the other way for the other. And you do find a happy balance. And yeah, I think it is possible to take the best of both worlds.
We are on the air with journalist and educator Irene Arcos here on Dialogos Radio and in the Dialogos interview series. And Irene, we often also see within families and households of the Greek diaspora tensions in terms of the difference in the way girls are socialized compared to the way that boys are socialized. How do these pressures manifest themselves, and how could these pressures be reconciled?
Well, I think there's gender role conflicts that happen, especially within the newer generation of families. There's a clash between the traditional culture and then, you know, the values of the cradle culture and then the values of the adopted culture. I think that Greek women as a whole, even here or in the old country, I don't think we're appreciated as much or respected as much or publicly acclaimed for what we do and for our strengths and for our accomplishments as much as our brothers or fathers. Greek society has tended to be patriarchal. And so I find that that creates a lot of tension in a woman and a young girl, because in order to be successful in the new world, they have to let go a lot of that baggage. I've spoken to many women who are dynamic and successful and professional, and they said that they have had to struggle to get rid of their cultural baggage as women in order to feel successful. Because I think inherently, consciously, unconsciously, our culture does not give the same credence, the same value to its daughters than to its sons. And I think, you know, some the people who are doing it the most, I think, are even the mothers, the women. And I don't think they're conscious of it. How different, what different messages they're giving their sons and their daughters. And it's the idea of living in this culture, the dominant culture, the American culture, that really espouses gender role equality. In America, we grow up with the idea that men and women, boys and girls, can be equal. And having that in the same body and soul of someone who was brought up to think, well, women are a certain way. They have to be nurturers. They have to tend to their families. They have to put themselves last, or other people have to come before them. That creates a very deep dissonance psychologically in the women who grew up outside their home country. And I don't think that my sight would have happened. I don't think we would be having this whole conversation had I not been a product of two cultures. Because from talking to my Greek women and my Greek counterparts, the issue of gender and gender inequality in Greece is not an issue, because it's not really pointed out, it's not talked about or brought to the surface. But because in the U.S. it is a major issue socially, it's on the landscape, then we can talk about it, that we're even speaking about it. And I think because you come from an outsider perspective, that you're able to see that, hey, Greek daughters are not given the same respect as their brothers. And only because I'm coming from a different perspective can I call it out. Whereas those who are living in the culture think it's, no, I'm fine with it. This is the way it is. Women flirt, get their way by treating men a certain way and looking very seductive. That's okay. That's how it works here. So it's complicated, but there's definitely, I think, a lot more conflict and consciousness of the disparities between the sexes growing up in a non-native Greek family than not.
Now, some issues that your blog often addresses have to do with matters that are often considered taboo within Greek families in the diaspora, including issues such as domestic violence, mental illness, and also drug abuse. How can families overcome these taboos and the silence that often accompanies these issues?
Well, I think we have to be honest with ourselves. And I think a lot of it, the taboo of not speaking, has to do with a few things. But one big one is the Greek ego. We're so proud to be what we are that we are not willing to look at what we're missing in, at what we're lacking, at what are our faults. we have to put our Greek ego down a bit so that we can see that, no, honey, there are Greek drug abusers. There's an incredible rate of domestic violence in the Greek community that is not talked about. We have all the social ills that other societies have, but because of our ego, we don't talk about it. And that's a shame, because we'll never be able to deal with the issue until we come face to face with it. So I think it has to do with ego. I think it has to do with being honest with ourselves as a community and being able to help each other, because, you know, that's what we have to do. And we have to stop putting this, oh, it's me, it's my ego over the collective good. And I think the Greeks do that often. They think of what's good for themselves and what makes themselves look good, but then they don't think of the kino. They don't think of how can we bond together as a real community, not trying to pit one against the other and have rivalries and jealousies come in between, giving us a collective front so that we can address these issues. You know, it goes back to ancient times. The city-states, they were fighting in every tent, every way possible, but there was no way to get them to think as one, because everybody wanted to be the boss. Everybody knew what they were doing or what the other guy or the other girl wasn't doing right. And that we have to change that, because we're not being honest with ourselves. And I don't think, frankly, we're going to be as successful as a collective community unless we put our ego to the side. We've done so much in this country and around the world as individuals. You can name so many examples of wonderful, successful Greeks all over the world. But we're not at that point yet where we're thinking as one. It's each man in their own city-state. It's each woman in her tent. So until we get to that spiritual level where we think as a community that can all, we're not going to see those problems. We're going to deny them. And of course, the other issue is tithapune. Tithapune ikseni, tithapune yali. This is the chorio mentality. Keep it on the hush, because you don't want your bad news or your dirty underwear, because everybody's going to be talking about it, because it's a shameful thing to have someone who's mentally ill in your family. So it's shame. It's the shame. We've got to get over the shame factor. I mean, it happens to a lot of us, but we need to have the courage to come out of our own individual little stone hut and say, you know, we're in this together.
We are on the air with journalist and educator Irene Arcos here on Diálogos Radio and the Diálogos interview series. And Irene, transitioning to another issue, one of the initiatives that you're currently working on is the establishment of a new foundation which will be dedicated to the needs and the causes of Greek women worldwide. Share with us some details about this new foundation.
Yes, I have this idea for a not-for-profit called the Eleniva Foundation. And its goals are threefold. It's to educate, to empower, and to celebrate. And it's going to be global. It's not going to be just based in the U.S. It's going to act as a vehicle to help women in all parts of the stages of their lives, whether they're young women growing up, or professional mothers and working women, and even the, you know, the yayadas in their later part of their lives. And there's many functions for each role, but just to educate, right, I'd want to create workshops where we can learn about our ethnicity and our roots and our orthodoxy, and to help the younger generation kind of learn who we can keep it Greek. Then there's the empowerment part, where I want to be able to help women in their professional careers and in their roles as mothers and nurturers, and helping the family, so the work-family balance, so what is it, the life-work balance, by offering sort of networking opportunities, by also creating mentorship opportunities, by creating a clearinghouse for financial information. The women who want to be entrepreneurs can get information to open up their own businesses or to get ahead in their work lives. I did some research for female entrepreneurship before and after the Euro crisis in Greece, and it was phenomenal. Before the Euro crisis, I think Greece, in terms of how many women had businesses, was like at the bottom of the European totem pole, bottom of the ladder. But then after the crisis, I think Greece is either in the number one or number two position. I think like 30% of all new businesses now are being started by Greek women in Greece. And so I think this is, presents an incredible opportunity for established women entrepreneurs in other nations of Greek descent to lend a helping hand to these women so that we can all go forward. And then finally, the last big pillar of this organization, the Ellinida Foundation, is going to help create celebration to be a Greek woman wherever you find yourself. So I'd want to create events where women would come together either online or in person and share stories and bring their oral histories together and celebrate the wonderful thing to be a Greek woman, an Ellinida, because we have so much strength, so much wonderful qualities as Greek women. We are heroes, but we're unspoken heroes. And it's about time we kind of gave each other a party, a real party, a sort of like a celebration and honor us, because who else will one day a year, next week, Mother's Day, doesn't do it, to do it sort of in a collective way where we bring everyone together. And that's my idea for the Ellinida Foundation, and I'm actively searching for sponsors or even people to help on the board so that we can take it one step further. And all that information could be, you can find on my website at GreekAmericanGirl.com.
Now, in closing, what message would you like to share to our listeners, and in particular to the Greek women who are listening to us from all around the world, especially in light of the commemoration of Mother's Day, which is coming up?
That Greek mothers and Greek sisters are just the heart of the home. They're the ones who keep the family together, who keep the traditions together, and they're beautiful, and they're strong, and sometimes even smarter than their husbands and their brothers, and just to be proud to be an Ellinida, because you have done so much.
Well, Irene, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us here on Diálogos Radio and the Diálogos interview series, and thank you for sharing your thoughts with us on these very important issues concerning the entire Greek community.
Thank you very much, Michael. It's a pleasure.
Attention iTunes users, Diálogos Radio is now just a click away. You can now download our podcasts and listen to Diálogos Radio 24/7 anytime, anywhere. Check us out today in the iTunes podcast directory and in iTunes Radio. We just wrapped up this week's edition of the Diálogos interview series here in Diálogos Radio, where we spoke with educator and blogger Irene Arcos of GreekAmericanGirl.com. As with all of our interviews, the podcast of this interview will soon be available on our website, dialogosmedia.org, where you can also find our on-demand programming, our articles and written work, our commentaries, our past playlists, and listen to our online radio station, Diálogos Radio 24/7. Our podcasts are also available in the official Diálogos Radio apps for Android, Kindle, and BlackBerry devices, and for Google Chrome, and in iTunes, TuneIn.com, the Windows Marketplace, and the Nobex Radio, WeCast, and Player FM apps for various smartphones. Coming up now here on Diálogos Radio is some more great Greek music, followed up by our commentary of the week.
Στο σώμα μου τρώει. Εσύ, κι ούτε ξέρω γιατί και πώς. Λείπεις εσύ, η πληγή μου κρυφή, κι εγώ λιώνω ζεστός πυλός. Πριν μισθωγιά, πριν χορτάσεις φίλια, δεν αντέχεται ο χωρισμός.
Έχει φτιάξει ο Θεός ο δρόμος της καρδιάς σου να ήταν ανοιχτός. Ναι, να σου'ν αλλιώς, στου έρωτα το τέλος να σου'ν ουρανός κι ο πόθος σου για μένα να ήταν ζωντανός.
Δεν βλέπω κανένα φως. Πριν πιστόγια, πριν χορτάσεις φιλιά, δεν αντέχεται ο χωρισμός.
Να σου'ν αλλιώς, αλλιώς από ό,τι σ' έχει φτιάξει ο Θεός, ο δρόμος της καρδιάς σου να ήταν ανοιχτός. Σου'ν αλλιώς, στου έρωτα το τέλος να σου'ν ουρανός κι ο πόθος σου για μένα να τα.
Diálogos Radio 24/7, our online radio station which features the best mix of great Greek music, plus programming and interviews from the vast Diálogos Radio archive. Tune in through our website, dialogosmedia.org, in iTunes Radio, or at tunein.com. We just heard Despina Limbio along with Michalis Hadzianis here in the Diálogos Radio with the song Nasu Nayos. And right before that, we heard Alkistis Protopsathi with Moro. Coming up now here in the Diálogos Radio is our commentary of the week. The Diálogos Radio's commentary of the week. Each week, Michael Nevradakis provides views and opinions on issues pertaining to Greece and to the worldwide Greek community. Coming up next, here on The Diálogos Radio. Quite often over the past 3 months, and especially in recent weeks, the ongoing political situation in Greece has made me feel like I am residing in a parallel universe, in a bizarre world, in a twilight zone. 100 days into the new Syriza-led coalition government in Greece, with its lofty promises to immediately end austerity, to tear apart the memorandum agreements and to write off Greece's public debt, we have seen a complete reversal of these pledges, and a continuation of more of the same from Greece's supposedly radical government. The latest examples of Syriza's breach of its pre-election promises comes straight from its latest proposals toward the so-called institutions in order to secure a new so-called bailout. The government is now proposing to maintain the unified property tax ENFIA, which prior to the elections it had promised to abolish and which it had deemed unconstitutional. The government proposes to continue the taxation of salaries below 12,000 euros per year, it is proposing a new increase to the age of retirement, and it has postponed another one of its central pre-election promises, an increase of the minimum wage to a still low 751 euros per month. And on top of that, on May 5th, the government announced that it is ready to immediately finalize a 1.2 billion euro deal with German company Fraport to sell off 14 regional airports of strategic and national security importance. That same day, the government also announced that it will invite investors to submit, by July, binding offers for a majority stake in Greece's biggest port, with Chinese-owned Costco ports as the favorite to land this deal. Additionally, the port of Thessaloniki and Greece's natural gas distributor are now also slated for privatization. This flies in direct contradiction to what Economy Minister George Stathakis was saying even after the elections back in February, when he said that the privatization of the port of Piraeus would be halted and that the privatization of the 14 regional Greek airports would not be able to pass through the Greek parliament. While these privatizations are being fast-tracked, privatizations which are slated to bring in perhaps a couple of billion euros at most, in just 3 months the new government has repaid a total of 9 billion euros in loans and bonds to the IMF and to other lenders, and it is scheduled to repay another 21.5 billion to the IMF, to the European Central Bank, and on maturing bonds from now until August. In other words, the sell-off of Greece's strategic assets does not even account for a couple of months' worth of debt repayments to its lenders, and yet these assets will be lost by the Greek state forever. The insanity does not stop here, however. Recently, the Finance Ministry proposed a new set of measures for a group of 23 supposedly luxury Greek islands that would be enforced during the tourist season from April to October. These measures are supposedly meant to combat tax evasion and include a requirement that all transactions over 70 euros which take place on these islands be made with a credit or debit card. These islands include some rather isolated locations which are completely forgotten about by the central government in Athens outside of the tourist season, islands like Karpathos and Samos, which have small populations, very poor infrastructure, an aging population, and little access to banks or ATMs. Most egregiously of all, however, the Ministry of Citizen Protection Yannis Panousis, in an interview which aired on a major Athens radio station on May 5th, stated that Syriza's pre-election pledges and its Thessaloniki policy program are no longer valid, that the expression of the will of the voters through elections or a referendum at this time would be worthless and useless, and that the voters who elected Syriza based on its pre-election promises are in the minority. And yet, we are supposed to believe that the government has approval ratings which reach as high as 80%, and that 75% of the Greek people wish to remain in the Eurozone at all costs, with those exact words being used in the polling question. We are supposed to believe that 3 months ago, Greeks voted for change, voted to end austerity, but that 3/4 of them want to remain in the same Eurozone, even if the cost of doing so means even more austerity. This makes no sense at all, of course, unless you understand that the opinion surveys in Greece are not independently conducted, but they are instead conducted by corrupt and politically connected polling firms, which do so on behalf of even more corrupt and politically connected media outlets, all of which are either pro-government, pro-Euro, or both. No one talks about two recent polls conducted in Greece by reputable non-Greek polling firms, which found that 52-53% of Greeks desire a return to a domestic currency. And no one from the government or its supporters can explain to us why, if 75% of Greeks indeed want to remain in the Eurozone at all costs, why there is such a fear and reluctance on the part of the government to schedule a referendum on this very issue. Instead, we are told that the government is trying hard, that it is doing the best it can, that all odds are against it, that they have good intentions, and that it is merely the bad Europeans and the bad IMF that are not letting the Greek government realize its pledges. This is indeed the communication strategy employed by the Syriza-led government, a portrayal of itself as being the underdog locked in an us-versus-them battle, where we, meaning the government, are the good guys. And as it seems, this strategy has been extremely effective in blinding people to the reality of what they have been doing. We are instead told that Greece is doing the best it can despite not having any advantages, that Germany holds all the cards. And yet, earlier this week, German Finance Minister Wolfgang Schäuble stated in an interview that if Greece is destroyed, meaning, in his view, if Greece leaves the Eurozone, then Germany would also be destroyed. So please, tell me, who really holds the upper hand? And yet, the many apologists for Syriza, both within and especially for some reason outside of Greece, are blind to these realities, instead making excuse after excuse after excuse for each and every one of Syriza's flip-flops and broken promises. I recently wrote an analysis, which was published in Truthout, about these broken promises and lies, and I was attacked as being, apparently, a supporter of the previous governments and political parties that were in power, as someone who just wants Syriza to fail, as someone that was a communist or a fascist or who lacks credibility, despite an article full of verifiable fact. This blind fanaticism reminds me of the blind support of a sports team, no matter how good or bad they might be. It has no place in politics, however. It's simply amazing and disheartening to see that the same people who before the elections were adamantly anti-austerity are now the foremost cheerleaders of Syriza's pro-austerity policies. Despite the criticism, the accusations, and the personal attacks against me and against the Alois Radio, we will continue to truly serve in a role of the fourth estate and to criticize the current government, just as we did with the previous government, and we do so eponymously, and I stand behind my positions publicly, positions which have not wavered like those of so many others. Can Syriza say the same thing about its pre-election pledges? Take Dialogos Radio on the go with you with the new Dialogos Radio app for Android devices. Now you can listen live to Dialogos Radio and Dialogos Radio 24/7, download our podcasts, and read our latest articles, all in our free Android app, available now in the Google Play Store. That was our commentary of the week here on the Dialogos Radio, and now stay tuned for our special musical tribute to Greek singer Rena Kumioti.
Σταμάτησε ρολόγιου τους δείχτες τώρα που ήμασταν αγκαλιά. Πάρε τις πίκρες μου και ρίχτες στο βράχο του καβό μαλλιά. Καλέ του καβό μαλλιά. Μουσική του ρολόγιου τους δείχτες. Τώρα που είμασταν αγκαλιά, λαβωμάτιες σου δείχτες, να στις γιατρέψω με φιλιά, καλέ μου. Να στις γιατρέψω με φιλιά. Νύχτες, νύχτες που πρόσμενα να έρθεις, καλέ μου. Νύχτες που πρόσμενα να έρθεις.
We just heard Stamatisa του ρολογιού τους δείκτες here on the Diálogos Radio to kick off our special musical tribute to Greek singer Irena Koumioti. Koumioti was born on the 3rd of May 1948 in the Athens neighborhood of Nea Ionia to parents who were refugees from Asia Minor with roots from Smyrna and Constantinople. Her musical journey began in earnest at the age of 20 when she began to make live appearances in Athens along with singer Manolis Mitsias. Within a few weeks, she was discovered by Lefteris Papadopoulos, who offered her the opportunity to collaborate on a new record by the major Greek singer at the time, Yannis Poulopoulos, an album whose music was being composed by major Greek musician Mimis Blessas. Her first major hit was titled Lose Mu to Stoma Sou, and her newfound popularity led her to sing alongside major names like Yannis Poulopoulos, Stratos Dionysiou, Lefteris Mitidineos, Grigoris Bithikotsis, Stamatis Kokotas, and Yorgos Zambetas, among others. In 1975, however, Koumioti left Greece for Canada, where she remained for 8 years. Upon her return to Greece in 1983, Koumioti continued her singing career, making appearances again alongside the likes of Yannis Poulopoulos and Yorgos Zambetas, as well as names such as Mary Linda. Irena Koumioti's musical career continues to the present day, and in all she has released over 20 albums and has been a part of the popular Greek television series The Oxeni. We will hear some more music by Irena Koumioti now here on the Diálogos Radio as we continue our special musical tribute.
Το παλικάρι, τα παλιά μεράκια που ξεχνώ. Φέξε για να έρθει το παλικάρι, τα παλιά μεράκια μου ξεχνώ. Ποιο να είναι εκείνος
παιδί. Όλη τη νύχτα να στενάζει, περνά σαν ίσκιος δεν μιλά. Και η ματιά του με σπαράζει. Άναψε καινούριο μου φεγγάρι, φώτισε το έρημο στενό. Παίξε για να έρθει το παλικάρι, τα παλιά μεράκια μου ξεχνώ. Παίξε για να έρθει το παλικάρι, τα παλιά μεράκια μου ξεχνώ.
Follow Dialogos Radio on Facebook and Twitter and remain connected to all our latest news and updates. Check us out today at facebook.com/dialogosmedia and at twitter.com/dialogosmedia. We continued our special tribute to Greek singer Rena Koumioti with another one of her famous songs titled Genurio Mou Fegari. Today's edition of Dialogos Radio is just about ready to come to a close, but we will be back again next week, same time, same place, with a highly interesting interview with scholar and author Mark Crispin Miller of NYU, editor of the Forbidden Bookshelf series of books, who will speak to us about issues ranging from censorship in the media and in publishing, to the spread of neoliberalism and its impact on democracy, elections, education, the economy, and much more all across the world. This interview is coming up a week from today as part of the Dialogos interview series here on Dialogos Radio. And be sure to also check out our latest article for Truthout, where we analyze the first 3 months of the Syriza-led coalition government in Greece and deconstruct its many broken pre-election promises and its continuation of economic austerity policies and privatizations. You can find a link to this article right from our website, dialogosmedia.org, where you can now also find our weekly commentaries in written form. We will close out today's program with one final song, again by Rena Koumioti, titled Lose Mou to Stoma Sou. Thank you for joining us once again today here on the Dialogos Radio, and have a wonderful weekend.
Χελιδονάκι στο μπαλκόνι μου, γύρεψε την πρώτη σου φωλιά. Γύρε να πλαγιάσεις στο σεντόνι μου, να γεμίσει κάμα ρυπουλιά. Yeah.